You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Are You Michelle from Skins? My name's April Pearson, and yes, I played Michelle in E4's iconic teen drama, Skins. And this show is helping me work through the highs and lows of being associated with something so iconic by talking to other creatives who have been through or are going through the same thing. Have you ever wondered what it's like being that person from... Well, sit back and let's find out together. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, April.
Do you want to know who this week's guest is?
I would absolutely love to.
Gosh, that was very loud.
Was it loud?
It was quite
loud. That was my quiet voice.
I know, you've got such a loud, quiet voice.
I'll whisper from now on.
No, don't whisper, that's freaky.
Okay.
The guests this week...
Plural. Interesting.
...are...
Doss.
Oliver and James Phelps.
The Weasley Twins Fellows?
The Weasley Twins Fellows, yes.
That's exciting.
I know, I'm excited to do two people at once.
There's a sentence.
Gosh.
Should we talk about that? Let's brush over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't think that's what I meant, is
two
it?
Two people at doing the Weasleys as well.
Jamie.
That's not okay.
No.
Well, how old are they now, like 30?
Yeah, they're our age. That's the crazy thing.
How do you feel about twins?
I feel like we shouldn't bring this up before I...
Twins scare you, though.
Twins do scare me a bit. They do.
Do they still dress? Do they like dress
no,
alike?
No, I don't think they're very scary.
They're the
twins.
Scary ones, aren't yeah. they? It's the ones who are in their sort of 50s, get the same haircut, dress exactly the same, sort of that. Twins wearing denim shorts, that's just not okay.
Why so specific?
I saw some twins wearing denim short ones. It freaked me out. It's just an image that just stuck with me.
Wow, I don't think they'll be wearing denim shorts.
I'd love to see them in denim shorts.
Really?
Bet you would. Two of them at the same time.
God.
Dirty mare.
Stop. Twin brothers Oliver and James Phelps are British actors. James's Twitter bio describes him as that guy who dyed his hair ginger for 10 years. Because, of course, James and Ollie are best known as their Harry Potter characters, Fred and George Weasley. Today is not the first time I am meeting these two because I had the very great pleasure of working with Ollie in a play in 2019, and I met James oh so briefly outside Malvern Theatre when the tour arrived in the Midlands where they are from. And at the time, they were both surrounded by Potter fans taking photos and signing books and generally being very gracious and very lovely to every single one. I'm very much looking forward to talking to them both about what being part of such an enormous franchise is actually like and how they manage to maintain a sense of self and how the post-Potter years have treated them. So I'm delighted to welcome to the show Ollie and James Phelps. Hooray!
Hey, thank you very much.
That was a very nice build-up.
Yeah, well, you know, you deserve a big build-up, right? My first question, are you George and Fred Weasley?
It depends who's asking. No, definitely not. Sometimes it's amazing the amount of people, you know, who get offended that we're not actually, that we don't actually have ginger hair.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a statement look, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I always remember someone saying that, and I was saying, well, we didn't actually fly broomsticks either, but that didn't bother me.
Oh my God. Do you know, my friend Jen pointed out to me earlier in the week that you've actually been asked every question under the sun, obviously, so that's a lot of pressure for me to start with. But she said that you were asked in an interview if you are actually twins. And she said it was the best slapback she'd ever heard because you were like, no, we just met at the audition.
You know when someone obviously doesn't get sarcasm, but you think, let's really hammer them?
Yeah. That's so kind of me. And actually, my experience of Ollie is me not getting a lot of his sarcasm because it's so dry. And I'm like, hold on, is that, are you being serious? Like, what?
Well, I mean, that whole thing came about because it was essentially the lady interviewing us just hadn't done any research whatsoever.
But looked at a picture of you.
No, I mean, it wouldn't have been hard just to even Google birthdays. And if we're born on the same day, there's a good chance if we look the same, got the same name.
Yeah.
So we ended up saying, no, we're not twins. We met at the audition, like you said. And she just went with it. So we went with it as well. And
oh, wow.
Behind her, like we could see, was her producer who was going wild. And the guy from, was it Warner Brothers or EA Games? Whoever were there.
It was one of the two, yeah.
Literally had his head in his hands, just like, no. But it went viral, so that's a good thing.
Oh, wow. So that's how she heard about it then. Yeah. Oh, my God. That is mad, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest. I'm already sitting here thinking, like, what can I possibly ask you to that you haven't already been asked? And I think that's something that I also felt when I was interviewing Ivana Lynch, who you have also quite recently interviewed. And I watched your interview with her and you were asking her questions like, how did the audition process go? And I was like, okay, well, if they're asking questions like that that she's possibly been asked before, then I'm safe. I can ask some Potter related questions and you might not mind.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, exactly. When we did that, because we've never asked any of our, especially castmates, about the audition process. It's like, well, it's like you turn up on set and you just assume everyone's done the same thing as you have.
Right. Or you've slightly kind of met them already. So
yes.
You've done, I mean, I'm imagining rounds and rounds of auditions for Harry Potter, right? I mean, side note, I also auditioned for Harry Potter, just saying. Auditioned for Hermione. Shockingly, I didn't get it. I don't know if you know that. But yeah, there was a lot of rounds of auditions in weird like cinemas in London. I don't know if you did that.
Oh, right. No, as were we were in a hotel in Leeds to begin with. That's where they did the open audition, in like the ballrooms and stuff that there. And then the rest of our auditions were at the studios. So there was probably, so it got really intimate really quickly.
Oh, wow.
In terms of it seemed to go down from, you know, a couple of thousand people out waiting to be seen for a different part to us and maybe four other people in a waiting room.
Yeah.
And that was quite, for a 14-year-old kid who'd never done it before, we were quite, oh, okay, this has got really real.
And
really
also
quickly.
Because there was a fan base, as you say, like thousands of people auditioned. It wasn't like...
Yeah, that was it. It wasn't like it was a...
You knew what you were auditioning for.
I think we did. And I think also as well, being at that age, you kind of are a bit naive that every film is massive.
Yes.
Every film is a huge budget. Every film has got millions and millions of people who are already buying a ticket in the cinema to go and watch it. Turns out it's not that way. But yeah, you know, it's... It was, but like at that time, it's kind of like, oh right, so this is what a film is, and it would kind of just roll from there.
But you can't possibly have been ready for that exposure, were you? Like, did they prep you?
It didn't come that quickly to us, to be honest with you, April. I remember after the day after the first premiere, we were on the Underground, and there was a lady opposite who recognised us from the red carpet. But after that, that was kind of it, and I found that certainly in the earlier films, the odd person would recognize us in the street around the time when the film was in the cinema, and then it would kind of like drop off and then come back out again. So I remember even towards the later films, I think, right, okay, it's getting like near November time. I should probably tidy up my appearance if I'm out and about because people start to recognize me a bit more. And then funny enough, when the final film came out, it just kind of stuck that afterwards. So it was quite cool. I'd say we always had the best of both. We weren't thrown in at the deep end, but we kind of got into it.
I think one thing that I always try and do with this show is find common ground with the guest because of my experience of being someone from. And I'm worried in this sense because I just feel like there is nothing really that I can relate to your experience because it sounds, and I found this when I was interviewing Evie as well, like, I'm like, oh yeah, me too. But Harry Potter is just a juggernaut of gargantuan levels. And yes, my experience with Skins is similar in a way, but I just wonder, can you think of something that in your experience, in your Harry Potter experience, is so unique to that, that no one could relate to it?
I always remember on my honeymoon, getting off the, we went to Fiji, getting off the boat on this remote island and this chap was helping me off, and he suddenly went, "Are you one of the Phelps brothers?" And this guy has left this island, I don't know, 20 times in his life. He was probably in his 20s just to go to the cinema on the main island. And that was,
wow.
In one way, it was really cool. And another way, completely blew my mind.
Yeah,
and it was,
I can imagine.
But I think the good thing about it is that we've always, I think playing good guys has always helped, in a sense that people find us a bit more approachable to talk to. But I suppose in your case, April, you were, like, your peer group watched Skins. Whereas when we were growing up, it was always maybe a little bit younger crowd. So it was only really when we were filming the later films, or when we were in our 20s, that more people were watching it who were old enough to come and recognise us out and about, type thing.
But you must have experienced, you know, certainly your peer group, your friends, your social circle, having that awareness of you. No
yeah.
way! Really? Oh my God,
well, we're from Birmingham, where... It's kind of like the poppy syndrome. Like, if you will not get above anyone else, you'll be cut down.
Wow, so but it was, hey, what a great way to keep you grounded.
Definitely. The only time I've seen anything like that, my mates really embraced that, was we were 17. We went on a school trip to London. And we were in Covent Garden. And some of my mates, it was the first time they'd ever been to London.
Yeah.
And so we were in Covent Garden, and they were obviously, doing the Potter, we'd been there a few times anyway. So we're walking through it, and then the cheerleading squad for the Alabama State University were in town for whatever reason.
Of course they were.
And they saw us in Covent Garden, and they asked, and they're like freaking out, and they were like, "Could we have a photo, please?" So we're like, sure. All of a sudden, all my friends decided they need to be in this photo as well.
I see.
And then the teachers decide they need to be in the photo. Like, it was a real...
Wow,
oh,
a real photo
here.
Op.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Someone years ago sent it me on Twitter. Like, oh, I can remember this day I met James and Oliver. But there's literally, like, random friends from school in this photograph.
And the teachers, and just people of Covent Garden. Oh my God!
I remember we were in Madrid at one of the last press junkets we were doing, and none of us had seen the movie at this point, but they just got a final cut through, and we said to the Warners guys, "Would we be able to see the film?" Obviously, it helps when answering questions and stuff. And they said, "Yeah, okay." So we went in the private screening rooms in Madrid, and there was myself, James, Rupert Grint, two of the publicity team from Warners, and our two friends. My one mate had never seen any film. And we were joking afterwards. He said, "That's quite cool, really, wasn't it?" I said, "Mate, there's literally millions of people who would kill for that ticket you've just seen to see this film about 3 weeks before it comes on general release."
Wow.
And typical, like, most of our mates, really, they're like, "Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? On to the next." And that's very much it. Like, we've almost got a saying, is just great.
Nice. Just
and
great.
It's either, it can be anything. It could be, "Oh, you're right, mate, we just got engaged. Great." It could be anything. And that's
savage.
But it's a sincere word, but it sounds really harsh.
Yeah.
But it's, I find that, I like that though, because our friends do show an interest, but it's not the interest.
Yes. You and know? You're so much more than, you know, Fred and George, the point
exactly.
of this podcast.
Exactly, exactly.
Guys, I did it. I dyed my hair, I used Natural Instincts, and I absolutely love it. It's so amazing that I've done this just in time to kind of go out and be part of society again. It's just absolutely perfect if you feel like your hair is a bit flat, or maybe in my case, my ends were a little bit on the orange side, and it's just balanced out my colour. And it was so gentle, which is just perfect for curly hair because it's so temperamental. But my hair is actually really shiny, and it took to it really well. My curl pattern's absolutely fine. And the process itself was really easy. So honestly, I am really buzzing. I think it looks great. So it comes in 18 shades. It takes 20 minutes, and it's perfect for now when you're just about to go out and start having fun and living your life again. And I just want to give a big shout out to the season one sponsor, Natural Instincts by Clairol. And if you want to try this out, you can find your perfect shade and more at clairol.com. So, the Harry Potter decade of your life took your most formative years. You know, you started when you were 14, and that's when you're figuring out who you are. And I can relate to that, at least, because I started Skins when I was 17, and I was immediately breaking the touch barrier and doing weird things on screen. And of course, can't imagine it any other way now. But can you talk a bit about how being part of the series affected or changed your trajectory, what you thought? Because for me, I was going to drama school, I was going to be on the stage at Stratford, and that was in my head, that was going to be really easy to do after school and off I go. But have you got any idea of what your plans would have been had you not been in Potter?
No. What a rubbish answer.
Great.
No one that I knew had ever gone into big productions like that. Like, it just didn't seem it was a thing. I knew a guy up the road used to be the cameraman for Midlands Today, which is like the news.
Wow.
BBC News.
What a big show.
That was about the extent of, and I once met the guy who does all the commentary for the football on the radio. Like, it just wasn't a thing. It didn't seem... I know how many times have you heard it, but people say it's not something which I thought anyone that comes from where we come from does. So it just always seemed out of reach. And I had no idea what I was going to do in life. I knew I was never going to go to university, and I knew I didn't want a desk job. So somehow all the stars aligned and we ended up doing a job where neither of those things happened.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you say the stars aligned, but actually you just said you didn't want to do either of those things. So you probably would never have ended up doing it anyway.
No, exactly. It's one of those questions that, like, you can easily... I mean, how many times have you thought about that every so often? Like,
I'm actually not sure I've been asked it. But it's also impossible, I suppose, to think... I guess for me, when I was three, I said to my mum and dad I wanted to be an actor. So at least that would have been part of it. And I think also my parents are in the industry. So unlike you, I have been exposed to the arts and being part of maybe this industry from a very young age, whereas it would have been different if I had had the neighbour who presented Meridian Tonight, and that would have been it. So yeah, it's tricky.
But then it's not setting. It just made that everything when Potter did come along, everything was a learning curve. Like, what was an assistant director? What did the producer do? What did the sound guy do? What did check the gate mean? Like, all these different things were completely alien to us. So literally every day, especially for the first two movies, were a learning curve with, it just happened to be possibly the best in the industry of what they did.
The most amazing university ever.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the actors that were like the adult actors on the set were possibly the best, well, very, very much so the best that British talent had to offer. And what was great is I can remember when we were filming the first movie and we were filming at King's Cross, and that was the first time we met Julie Walters, who was going to play our mum. And I remember being so nervous because, Julie Walters is amazing.
Of course.
And she was the most... I can remember she came down, we were waiting in a train, that was like the green room at the station. And also coming down the train, you just hear, "Where are my boys? Where are my boys?" And then Rupert, Oliver and myself met Julie for the first time, and she was so nice, and she said, "Then if you ever got any questions, just ask me."
Wow.
And that continued throughout the whole eight films. So that was, it's pretty cool that you could pick brains of people like that.
Yeah, you can't help but learn everything that they've got, just absorb it like a sponge.
Yeah, and not just what they're doing on the set, but how they conduct themselves off the set as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the most important things, I would say, is being a nice person, because there are quite a lot of not very nice people.
Yeah, but they don't hang around long, do they?
Well, I don't know, James. I've I've met a few horrible people who are still sticking around.
Still there.
Still hanging on in there. But no, I know what you mean. As in, you know, I would never want to hang out with them again. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
So your podcast, Normal Not Normal, looks to dispel the idea that anyone has a, in quotes, normal life. And you've been podcasting for a number of years post-Potter. But what got you round to this particular title? Because I think it's interesting and kind of plays into what my podcast is about. And it's that idea that you guys are in some way like superstars and you live a not normal life. And I just wonder why you decided to pick that as the title for your podcast.
We were thinking of different ideas because our second season came about kind of by chance last lockdown. At the beginning of the lockdown, we did an interview with Johanna Konta, and I just said, "Oh, do you want to come on our podcast?" And she was like, "Have you got one?" I'm like, "Yeah, we do now." So we literally did
so
that.
Does
and it
everyone.
Was all very. It was all very, you know, fly by the seat of your pants type stuff. It was all on a Zoom and then just straight upload. And it all got really good feedback throughout the whole season. And then we were approached by a couple of production companies and basically told us, you know, we need to plot out the whole series as best we can. What is the theme of it? What is, you know? And we were just coming about with ideas. And I always remember almost like a eureka moment for me. So I've been going to counselling probably for the last 4 years. And one of my big hang-ups before that was almost, I mean, like mental counseling. I don't mean like couples counseling or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, but it was like, what is normal? Because I was assuming myself, but it's not the normal way of doing things. And that was like one of my main bugbears, was trying to compare yourself to something what isn't comparable. Mm-hmm. And that's always stuck with me. So it's kind of a thing where we kind of flipped it to try and, because we know that there's a lot of people who listen to our show who, to them, it may be their one escapism a week of whatever nastiness is going on for them. And, you know, I suppose it's a duty of care to the listener, but also, as you say, dispel that notion of what is normal. Your normality is only what you do.
And actually, it seems like it could be an extension of your own personal counselling work, because I feel the same in my podcast that, yeah, you know, I have done a lot of the same sort of thing of comparing myself to now Oscar-winning castmates and thinking, well, where's my Oscar? You know, and it's tough. Like it definitely is a thing. And I actually think, like, talking to other actors about that whole thing, comparing yourself to others and what is my norm and success as well. And I think that's so undefinable.
Yeah, exactly. It's a natural human thing, isn't it, to compare yourself. That's always going to be there, because it's, especially if you're in the same profession or you've had the same, wouldn't say same start, but same exposure to something. But then you've got everything else in the background of life, what goes into that, which also adds on to normality. But I remember when we were doing the play, April, and we were up in York, and these two girls had flown over from Germany to see the show, and they met me at the stage door. They saw the matinee, and I said, "Oh, what are you doing now?" Because we had, like, I don't know, an hour and a half or something. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, you know, we're just gonna go for a walk." And I said, "Well, do you want to go?" There was an ice cream van, I remember, at the bottom of the street by the river. And I just said, "Do you want to go grab an ice cream?" And they were, like, completely blown away by it. But to me, I said to them, "Look, I'd be doing nothing for the next hour and a half. Mm-hmm. Let's just have a chat." And they were just telling me, you know, about their, why they came over. They wanted to see the play, and they were a fan of Harry Potter and that type of thing. And just stuff like that was really cool, because to me that's normality to me, is just being able to go out afterwards.
Did you buy the ice cream, or did you get them to buy you the ice cream?
I think I would have bought. I would have bought it.
That is only a brother can ask you that.
What a stitch up! What a stitch up!
I can imagine him getting there thinking, I'm either going to have the 99p like lolly, or I'm going to go for the full works with the flake and the raspberry ripple.
Yeah, I'd have screwball for like £8 or something. Yeah. I know, yeah. No, he was... So
99s aren't 99p anymore, though, mind. Like,
no,
they are...
No, I would have gone for, like, the double, triple
exactly,
thing.
Exactly, with the two, like, five with the quid two or cones. Something.
Yeah,
the two in.
Yeah. But, yeah, but, like, so, as I say, with that, it's kind of like, that's, like, normality for us. But then listening to other people, it's been nice, actually, throughout the whole season, we've had feedback from people saying it's been great as just a weight off my shoulders, because I'm not doing great at, I don't know, mm-hmm, some subject in university or something like that, or work, and they drop them note saying, but actually that's okay, because that's what I'm doing. What am I comparing who am I comparing myself to? Mm. Which is mostly unachievable. If you're comparing yourself to somebody, you're paying more attention out of somebody else than you are yourself, which isn't necessarily a good thing.
Do you suffer from my affliction, which is comparing yourself to the other castmates that you had in Harry Potter?
Not anymore. I certainly did when we first finished, but I think subsequently since then, a lot of this comes back from counseling, really. I'm very happy in my own skin, my own self, you know. I'm happy where I'm
so
at.
Interesting that it's come from counseling. I have really looked into maybe needing it. You know, I've been so hell-bent on being professional and I'm okay in this industry and I can do this, and they're off winning Oscars and doing loads of films. And I've just never thought to kind of look into that in my own head and figure out whether there is a hangover from being so successful so young.
I think that's it. It's always that, because you're trying to live up to that success, aren't you? And that's which is always, I mean, it wasn't just, I've got to be honest, it wasn't just... you know, professional life that I was after when I went there, like anything like that. But it just it was a nice byproduct from it, because it all adds in, especially with our industry, is it seems to never stop.
And it's that pressure, isn't it? Constant pressure. Yeah. And even you, sorry, James, I will talk to you in a minute. but Ollie, I remember when we did the play, that was your first professional stage appearance, right? Or one of the first.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you when we were rehearsing, and you were just like, I really don't want this to be terrible, because people are, you know.
That was the main thing, yeah.
Yeah, they're coming to expecting me to be, you know, proficient at stage performance, and I've never done it.
Yeah, I mean, luckily I had a notebook, what the character had.
So
I had pretty much everything written down in it. Move up stage now. Mm-hmm. But there was, I just wanted to make sure I did everything properly. That was the main thing, as you say, and be taken, you know, you're doing a job, you do it to the best of your ability. But I remember on one night I went out and gave a line which wasn't funny at all. But someone was obviously expecting to see one of the Weasleys front row.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
No, he just got killed. You don't need to laugh at that bit.
Oh, nice that you've got supportive fans, though.
Exactly.
That's nice. So, James, has there ever been a time that you can think of post-Potter where you've been expected to give a performance, or you felt the weight of being a Weasley behind you whilst you're trying to do something that's not Potter-related?
Yeah, kind of. Just going back to what Oliver said, so I and what you were saying, I used to have that wake up in the middle of the night and thinking, where's the next job coming from? That always kept happening. But I didn't do counselling or anything. I just go hiking a lot, or bike riding a lot. And if you go hiking, especially up mountains and stuff, like behind me, I've got a lot of photos of basically where I've been hiking. Mm-hmm. And I found that just that time on your own really does, or with a friend, but surrounded by nature and everything, that definitely helped me, knowing that the world's going to keep on turning even if you don't get that that one gig. And it's ironically, when I stopped worrying about that stuff, I got more opportunities.
Wow.
And my anxiety, I used to be terrible going into auditions. I was so anxious. Like I could give a Q&A in front of 10,000 people and not worry. But put me in a room with one man and a script and I will absolutely
go to bits.
Like break. Yeah.
Why?
But once I started, I don't know. I do not know.
Going back to bringing
to your question, I think people may think, oh, he's in Harry Potter, let's see what he can do.
Yeah.
And that would always be I'd always be trying to do what I thought they want.
Interesting.
And then I ended up doing, taking classes and all that, which I didn't do because I didn't go to drama school. So I ended up doing like lessons on the side and all that kind of stuff, learning on method. And that definitely helped. And I remember my one teacher said to me, if you're going to fail, just fail big. Like don't regret anything, which definitely helped.
Really good advice.
Yeah. And then, and also, so the first stage show I ever did was in like 2011, 2012. So just after Potter had finished, and the director, Adam, he gave me the best bit of advice anyone has ever given me. And that is, anyone watching you do anything wants you to be the best they've ever seen. Like, they don't want you to suck because it's bad for every, like, you.
That's
you...
a very good point.
So that definitely helped. And just bring it around to your question. So I was in a show in tail end of 2018, and it was a true story about the Leyton Orient Football Club in the First World War, where they all signed up on mass to go and fight in the war. And so it was quite a serious, well, it was a very serious true story. And you had people like Potter fans there who had only seen me as a very jolly kind of guy, but I'd done so much research and I really wanted this to be great. And it ended up being it was the best thing I've ever done. It was probably the least paid job I've ever done, but it was the most rewarding. I went to sleep soundly at night knowing that everything was exactly how it should be.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and also it gave people a different view of not just playing a twin with ginger hair.
Right.
So yeah, that's probably it.
That makes sense that you slept soundly as well, because that speaks to the creative in you. It's not about the job. It's about, as in the job and the financial reward, it's about the work and the being recognised as the creative person that you are.
I guess so. But I mean, how many people do we know who have got lots of money, but they're not happy? So,
yeah.
I mean, I would like that trance to say, I'm not happy, but
I was going to say, he's saying this right now.
No, but it is true though. Like it's, and like you can do jobs for five times the amount and it's not a nice experience. And you think, I just want this to be over. Yeah. But then you do something and it's just for the love of it. And it was just one of those where everything came together. Like the crew were great. The cast were great. It was just a great environment to work for about 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah. And you were being recognized as yourself and yeah. not part of the duo and not part of the franchise.
Yeah.
And that's amazing for self-esteem, I can imagine.
Yeah, a little bit.
Bravo. So my patron Hayley's actually asked, what's been your favourite non-Harry Potter project to work on, which you've just answered perfectly. She actually references Danny in the Human Zoo as a great example of something that was good. So maybe Ollie, you could answer what your favourite post-Potter job has been.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, now you've just said it, Danny in the Human Zoo was such a laugh because it was, it was set in the Black Country in Dudley. In the 1970s, which would be where my mum would have gone clubbing. And, you know, we had to do the whole thing with the accent and all this, that and the other. And it was quite different.
The audition for that was hilarious, though, because we just went in there saying, they're from Dudley. We're going to be as authentic as we possibly can be.
Yeah.
So we did. And because my mum's side of the family is from the Black Country, we can do the Black Country accent very well.
It is hard. That's a hard one.
Well, but to the point where we were even throwing in the dialect as well for certain words. And the casting agent was kind of sitting there and said, that was great. Could you do it so we understand what you're saying?
So, you die with that. You die with that. And they were, they were kind of just looking at it like, oh, right, okay. But that went really good. And the cool thing about that job, I think, was because we were actually asked to go over to Japan. For the opening of the theme park out there. And it clashed totally with the filming schedule. So we pretty much had to choose which one did we want to do. And we've been very lucky to have been able to travel the world before. And we've been to Japan before anyway. And the thing what they were sending through is still quite vague as opposed to what we'd be doing out there and stuff. And we were like, I really want to do this. So we said, you know, the Wednesday evening, no, we'll do the show. Down in the Human Zoo. And then on the Thursday morning, first thing, we received an email which Lenny Henry had actually sent the day before, basically asking us if we'd go in, if we'd do the show. He said, I know Dudley isn't Japan, but this, that and the other. So it was nice that he sent that before knowing that we'd already said yes. And we said at the time that we've done the right thing in terms of this because it was nice to do it. It was something totally different. They edited it a lot because the original story was supposed to be post-Watershed. So our characters were a lot more foul-mouthed, a lot more smoking, a lot more aggressive.
Yes.
And then it came out, I think it was on like at 8 o'clock or something like that. So quite a bit of it got changed. But just being able to film that was all a cool couple of weeks. Great crew, great people who worked in it. And it all just... Yeah, looking back, it was really, really good fun. It's funny listening to people, certainly from America, who've come across it and have said, even then, like, I don't quite understand what you were saying, but it was cool seeing yourself. And Ivana Lynch was on that show as well. So being able to work with Evie again was nice.
Yeah, they probably had to subtitle you over there.
Probably, yeah. Very probably.
They had to subtitle Cheryl Cole when she did X Factor, so I can imagine that.
Oh, right, okay, very probably.
Yeah, but you saw, whenever you see that, I can't believe people don't understand what people are saying. So when you have some guy from the back swamp of Louisiana and they talk on whatever show and they don't subtitle them.
True. I mean, there are some dialects in some British dialects that I'm like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
And actually, as you say, the deep Black Country and the dialects that there are idiosyncrasies within the dialects that are completely specific to that area. I can understand that there are some people
definitely.
Who are like,
I mean,
I
remember at my wedding, we had my pal Jesse, he's from Virginia, but lived in California for years. So he's very much a California type guy. And he was talking with my Uncle Joe, he's in his 90s now, very, very Black Country. And they were talking for about half an hour or something. And I don't think either of them quite understood quite what the other one was saying. I said to Jesse after, so what was he talking about? And he said, he was telling me about this this house, which is doing very well. I think it's going to do very well, this house. He said, is he in building? I was like, what was it? He said, no, an os. I said, no, he's on about the horse. Ascot, I think, or something like that, the following week, and he was trying to give my mate a tip on it, but he said,
wow,
not a clue. Not a clue.
Not a clue.
But I love
at
that.
At least
though.
It was kind
though.
Of close.
Yeah, but I love that. I mean, it is a great mix of our experiences in life that we can mix culture, people, and things like that.
Yeah, they would never have been in a room together if you hadn't been in Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, I still have trouble sometimes with my uncle anyway, so Jesse never stood a chance.
Fine. So, patrons Laura and Lynn, some people spend their whole lives trying to get away from being known as one character, which I definitely did for the last 13 years. And now I'm leaning into it because it feels a lot. It's easier. So how, or why, or when did you decide to embrace being Fred and George from Harry Potter? And do you enjoy being known as Fred and George?
I guess we always did. I wouldn't say we try and... Well, I always said... Yeah, I remember even when we were filming it, I never wanted to be one of those people that never want to speak about the character. Because if I ever met anyone that I'm really... Like, I'm a big Simpsons fan and I'm a big South Park fan. If I've met any of the guys that write those shows, I would love to be able to pick their brains about something. And I kind of think that's... If people are going to speak to us, 9 times out of 10, it's because they've seen Harry Potter. In fact, 9.5 times out of 10 is because they've seen Harry Potter. So you want to give that back. And I like to think as well that most people can see past the whole, you know, one gig and that's it kind of thing.
Do you think so?
Well, I hope, I can only hope. But
as you can see, my experience is much more jaded than yours.
Yeah, well, maybe mine is, but I'm just so naive to even think about it anyway, because you can't change people's opinion like that.
I know. I need to be more Brummy about it.
Yeah, great.
I need to be more like, great. I need to stop overthinking it. They just know me from Skins, April. Get over it.
I think the balance, what I found is that we've always been, like, we're kind of the go-to people for the company in terms of promotional stuff. I think they think we're a safe set of hands in terms of, you know, we're not going to rock the boat. We'll talk exactly what we're talking about and that's it. And yeah. I think that's where we've kind of probably got more exposure in terms of the brand itself, like brand association, which is,
yeah,
it's not a bad thing. As I say, we've been able to travel the world on the company credit card and it is awesome. And if the offset to that is, oh yeah, I'll talk about this costume or that premiere or whatever, that's fine. And the good thing about it is that when we're talking about it with people, it's people who want to know the answer. It's not like we're projecting on people, oh yeah, we were in Harry Potter. It's more a case of, we won't talk about it unless asked about.
Yeah. That's so interesting as well, though, that the offset is something positive. I think maybe where I'm coming from is, so many times when talking about Skins or when talking about Michelle particularly, it was always in a negative connotation. There was always something wrong with her, or why is she like this, or how can you expose teenagers doing this stuff? It's your fault that my house party got wrecked. All of that kind of thing was what we had to deal with.
Yeah,
so
it's
a very different association.
Yeah, which I think again goes into a bit like earlier, you were doing it to your peer group, whereas ours was, you know, it was a PG to begin with, whereas what was Skins, like 15 maybe, something like that?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Well, but anyway, but do you know what I mean? Like it showed that type of adolescence, didn't it?
Yeah, but also ours was a book format before, so everybody already had their own ideas about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas you were portraying the story straight out. People know that we're playing the parts, whereas with you, people may think that you were that person.
True. Actually, very good point. Very good point. And I do think that's something that's definitely travelled with me. And also, because of being 17, I feel like I partly morphed into her for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of spent 2 years inhabiting that person and just became outwardly what people wanted me to be. A bit like when you were saying, you know, people are disappointed that you don't have ginger hair or that you're not always funny and making jokes and casting spells. You know, it's funny. And James, you're right. You know, you do hope that people can see past that, like, one character, one, you know, forever. But it's sometimes they can't. I would love to know how you two define success. What is success for you guys?
Ooh, what a good question. All right, let me think. I would say can I give a two-part answer?
If you must.
If I must. So first of all, I would bring it back to being able to go to sleep at night knowing that you are exactly at where you always want to be. And it doesn't have to be you're in the biggest production ever. It's that you are you know that you've gone to bed and the job you did then, people saw it and they thought that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily just your role as well, but the whole production you were involved in. And if you contributed to that, then that makes it even more a success thing. And my second part would be something that people want to see. So if,
wow.
Does that make sense? So, and not
yeah.
And I go back to the point where I don't want to be a leading man. Like, I've got no desire to be that, but I'd love to be the guy who's in the production, which people are like, I saw that was awesome, and I love what you did in this point. Whereas, you know, it's, you know, if you're on stage and you do subtle things which only someone who's looking at you and not on the main thing are going to see, but that kind of thing really excites me in a production.
That's interesting. That makes you feel successful if you've been part of something that people enjoy and want to see.
Yeah, not so much of someone's. I mean, how many times has the Oscar been won by a film which you've seen and you're like, am I missing something here?
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely have no, and I can say it's because I haven't won any, but I have no desire for awards or anything.
You won't
like
now.
That.
Like it,
yeah, I don't. No, but honestly, it doesn't mean anything to me because it's all opinion. The only awards that I want to win are either the ones at my golf club. Or like it's
You're a big golfer as well.
Yeah,
I could not believe how many times Ollie went to play golf when we were on tour.
It's like three times a week, yeah.
Literally every place we went, he was like, "Where's the next golf club?"
That's the part of the perks of traveling, isn't it? But true. I generally think that it's everyone's opinion. Yes, it means something, but I don't believe that it should be rewarded with an award. It should be. Nothing's better than having someone after a production come over to you. So just go back to this football play I did. We had guys from one of the first scenes is it's set in the supporters bar. And the first character goes and he's like the landlord. And he's like, good evening, everyone. And there are these two skinheads on the front row who literally like, all you could hear is like, all right, mate. And then it's like, oh, it's going to be one of those nights. And then I have to give my opening line at the front top of the stage. And then you just hear, psh, as they're opening their cans of lager. And then you could just see, you could just hear, you see that geezer who's in that film? Yeah, he is. And it's kind of like the football fan was in the theatre.
Wow.
And anyway, long story short, at the end of the play, these guys were in floods of tears because they just bought in to what it was. And then we'd always go for a drink at the pub around the corner after the show. And these guys came over. And the one guy is, like I say, two big guys you wouldn't want to mess with. And they came over and said, oh, we heard you talking about it on the radio. And we thought, yeah, we'll go. That'll be a laugh. It's about football. We'll see what happens. First time I've ever been to the theatre, ever. But I've loved it. And now six of my mates are coming back with me in 3 weeks because we want to see it again.
Wow.
And that...
Wow.
Going on success, like changing people's perception of theatre, because they could easily think, oh, it's just people, you know, like playing around on stage. Yeah. It's not real. But... That was cool. Like that was a memory which still gives me goosebumps thinking about it.
Me too. I wasn't even there. Wow. What a great example. Top that, Ollie.
Yeah. Go. Yeah.
I think it's, yeah, similar. I'd say for me, success is whatever it is you're doing. So it could be personal, it could be professional, it could be whatever. Whatever you're doing, knowing that you've done your best at it, that you couldn't have done anything more. To me, that's success. In terms of, mm-hmm. Because if you can't do anything more than what you've done, success isn't achievable, is it? And there's always a case of what do you stop when you've done what you wanted to do? Do you stop? Is that it, or are you looking to move on to the next bit? Do you know what I mean? Because I think sometimes you could say, oh, yeah, that was really good, and then just sit on it, and then just that's it. Whereas I like to think that it's a case of, okay, that was really good, right? On to the next. What are we doing now? Whereas I mean, taking some time to celebrate in it, in yourself, be it the end of a theatre run, be it the end of a shoot, be it the end of whatever it is. But I think that after that, you can kind of, knowing that you've done 100% what you were going to do. And as James said, that if you're, because I think I do believe that if you do your best at anything, people will notice.
Mm-hmm.
Be it one person, be it a million people, it doesn't matter. As long as one, but like one of the great things from our podcast, we know it's not. We know it's not the most successful one in the world. We know it's not the least successful. It's just, do you know what I mean? But getting responses from people saying, you have brightened my year. This week I lost my, like, unfortunately, I got a message from someone who'd lost her brother. And she listened to the podcast in the hospital. So she said, I've just, you know, it was quite a long thing. But I was in tears reading this note from this girl. But just saying that, I just want to let you know that you guys are doing such a great thing. And just that.
And actually, it doesn't matter if 1,000 people listen. The fact that that one person listened and you made such an impact at a time of need.
Exactly, exactly.
That's got to be success.
Exactly. Now, that's worth more than anything that you could get told. Oh, what an amazing thing. As James said, you know, have a trophy or have a... I mean, don't get me wrong, they're nice to look at those things, but they don't define what you've done. I'd much rather have one letter from somebody saying, you stopped me, or you could have stopped me from doing something silly, or you saved, or you brightened at least one part. And then to go on from, say, I'll know that whenever I listen to your podcast, I'll always be reminded of my brother. And just, even though he may not have ever listened to or anything like that, but knowing that there's that thing, what puts a positive connotation on stuff, that's success to me. Because there's so much negativity and so much just downright crap out there right now. And one thing that we try and do is, you don't need to be reminded of that. Life's for living, not just for moping about. So let's just enjoy that side of things. So to me, that's successful.
Wow. Well done, guys. That was a really good answer. I have to say, both of you smashed. You both smashed that.
April, can I ask, what do you deem as success? Sorry to take over your podcast, but I'm intrigued.
I'm still working on it, I have to say. I actually had, I've been volunteering throughout the pandemic for a food partnership, and we provide food parcels for people who are experiencing food poverty in Brighton and Hove. And when I put that question out to my followers, how would you define success? My manager at volunteering said exactly that, James. How would you define success, April? Why are you successful? And she actually came in the next week with a list in her notebook of things that she saw me as successful. And there were things that I hadn't even considered for myself, because I have been so wrapped up in that idea of validation, needing that trophy, needing the things that deem you successful in the eyes of a wider audience. And she said, you know, you're a great friend.
Yeah.
Something that simple. That's, you're successful at being a great friend to people. You're a fantastic wife to your husband. You know, things that just bring you back to the things that actually matter. And it's just like you were saying, Ollie, focusing on those things, being out on a hike and seeing how insignificant you actually are. Those things are so grounding and so important when you're having one of those moments of like, oh my God, it's so amazing that one of my co-stars has won an Oscar. Why haven't I? Actually, it's today I may have brightened someone's day with this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And also as well, you've got to remember, in terms of, as you say, in terms of trophy, how many people are after that? That one thing.
Oh my God.
Do you know what I mean? And the other
stuff. My casting bracket is so saturated.
So it's like, so it's kind of like, deem yourself, as I say, like whatever you're putting yourself into, that's surely the measure of a legacy of person. Like how many times have we been, you know, it sounds a bit morbid, but how many times you read like an obituary letter and it lists, you know, what they've won or what they've, but then you read what they did. Then you read the impact on their family. You know, that's the bit that people remember people by, not of, oh yeah, they did, you know, I'm thinking of like sports connotations, oh yeah, they won this trophy. But then it could be the last of started a foundation which saved so many people from, as you say, from food poverty or whatever like that. Like that is success to me on a non, I suppose it's an, that's a not a selfish, a selfish point of view. Selfish success is validation. I think that's the main thing. But then if we're looking in a wider sense, the word success in terms of everyone's, what someone sees you as successful in, it would be that, surely.
Yeah. And I do think I've fallen foul of that selfishness for sure. When I came out of Skins, I was like, right, well, the jobs are going to come flying in.
Yeah.
And I'll just wait. It's all going to come to me. Because there is a very, there's a, it's a breeding ground for selfish people, the entertainment industry. So,
totally.
And it's very, very easy to fall foul of that, especially when you are a teenager and you're so young and you're so selfish because you're a teenager.
Yeah. No, definitely.
By the way, I love all the teenagers that listen. I love you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're selfish. The lot of you. Yeah.
But, you know, when you become an adult, I suppose, you look back and you think, God, I was selfish. But you needed to be because you were finding out who you were.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and well, that's how you end up with where you are now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
The formative years.
Well, this is getting very, very deep, isn't it? You learn more from your mistakes, though, don't you? I know it's easy to say, but you do. You learn so much more from mistakes and things that you change than going straight through.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And I do think actually just being honest about that and being like, actually, I was a bit of a dick back then. And coming to terms with that is much better than burying it and continuing being that person.
Yeah, of course.
Kiri, if you were never in Potter, what would you be doing now for a job?
Well, that is something I think about. Like I said, I used to think about that a lot. Something outdoors. Mountain search and rescue.
Cool.
No, but James, you wouldn't be able to do that though because you can't read a map.
Oh. Do you mean like a proper Canadian Mountie?
No, I'm like, you know, the guys who have to go and find someone who tries to climb Snowdon in their jeans and then realise it's actually a bit tougher than it is.
In February.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. something outdoors and scary.
Yeah, then essentially, okay. Yes.
Ollie?
I don't know. I think probably I would say like something like a pilot. But then again,
another scary job.
But I think, though, that my love for being on aircraft and stuff has come as a result from being in the films and traveling so much with that. So,
oh my God.
It's kind of like a byproduct of it.
I'm such a bad flyer. Can't cope with flying.
Oh, I love it. I always remember once we were in Australia and we took off and the engines all cut out on the plane. We were probably about 3 or 4 minutes into takeoff and it just cut out. Everything went dead. And all you can hear is just like the of the wind outside or the breeze outside.
No.
And there was a few of us in this.
I'm having a panic attack just thinking about it.
There was a few of us there. You could see some people like really getting a bit odd. And we were kind of at that part where, right, luckily a plane is designed as a glider. So even if you're without an engine, you can still glide mostly, right? But anyway, we were in there and we were still thinking, it's amazing this thing where you're in no control of what's going on. So we started doing, like James was there as well, we started doing this, Sean Locke does it in a sketch. And we're kind of just like looking at each other going, let's meet Jesus.
Oh my God. I would have been on that. If you had been on that plane and I'd been there and I was hearing you do that, I'd have probably had to figure out a way of killing you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, look, I mean, you could tell, I mean, the engine started up again and the pilot came on like typical Aussie fashion going, whoa, there we go. And off we went. It was no problem at all.
Oh my God. Horrible. So, and you're inspired to be a pilot because of that moment?
Exactly.
Yeah, that would be me. That would be me doing it. I'd drop the oxygen masks.
All right, guys, we're all right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But definitely not a helicopter pilot. I wouldn't want to do that. But yeah, aircraft pilot, definitely.
Okay, very good. If you're sitting there thinking, how can I help these guys in creating this podcast? How can I show support for this free content that I'm consuming? Which I'm sure is what you're thinking. Then head over to Patreon. The Are You Michelle from Skins Patreon page has 3 membership levels that you can select. £3, £5 and £10. All the membership levels offer something special. Access to a private membership club, a special Patreon-only podcast with me talking about my skin story, and even access to ask the guests questions yourself. But the best part of being a patron is being part of an amazing community. The patrons that are already there are friends, they're friends outside of this podcast, and it's been amazing to watch the friendships flourish. Of course, you can always be a patron and be a creeper. You don't have to be part of any of the stuff. We still need your support. For us, Patreon gives us the freedom and the creativity to create the content that you want, whilst also hearing from you. It's a win-win. Just search Are You Michelle from Skins on patreon.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, I always ask my guests who they are a super fan of. Who would you go up to in the street and say, are you? And what's your most memorable moment when someone's said that to you?
I think most memorable moment would be when we were at Universal Studios in Orlando and Kobe Bryant was there. And
oh God, he was, sorry, he you was dropped an, something, Ollie.
Yeah, I was going to, oh, is that it? There we go. And he was an absolutely massive Harry Potter fan, like absolutely massive, to the point where he was saying how he can only have one butterbeer if he's playing a game that day because he realised it too affects his performance. Like he was all in. And I remember I was talking to him for like you know, they start, the guys have only got 5 minutes. We're like, we got as long as we want. And and I said, we've got to do a thing tonight. Otherwise, we'd have come to watch the game. And he said, why? We suck at the moment. Don't bother doing that. But he was asking all about, you know, I can't believe I'm hanging with the Weasleys and all this. And we're like, this is insane.
Wild.
So that was, to me, that just brought it home that you're never too cool to, you know what I mean? Like, you've got MVP however many times over, arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all time, or sports icons of all time, really, especially in American sport. And he knows exactly what's what. And I said, do you mind if we get a photo? And he said, only if I get one. I was like, yes.
Wow.
So stuff like that was, that was really cool. That was really cool.
And he was as nice as you want, like you would expect.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you meet someone and it's like, they are awesome. That was, that ticked it off. I know we all, there was like, Oliver, myself, Matt Lewis and Devin Murray, and we all went away like little schoolgirls.
Yeah.
Who just met the favourite boy band. Like, yeah, exactly. It was a very memorable day.
But you wouldn't have gone up to him and said, are you Kobe Bryant, would you?
No, because he was about 6 foot eight. So
kind of hard to miss.
Bit of a giveaway. who would I go up to? I'm a huge Bon Jovi fan. So I would go up to Richie Sambora, who's the guitarist, who isn't toying with him at the moment. But he's the reason why I picked up the guitar again when I was 18. And so I would go, are you Richie Sambora? Could you sign my guitar, please? And like literally just freak out.
That's mad, isn't it? See? Like, normal, not normal, right here.
Oliver, I'm intrigued. Who's yours?
I don't know, really. It's weird. Like, I've had that opportunity to go up to people, and I'm quite reserved when it comes to that. I'm like, no, they don't want to be hassled. And then afterwards, maybe I'll regret it. Like, sometimes that does happen.
I feel like yours might be a sports person.
Maybe. Yeah, it probably would be, actually. I don't know who, though. Probably, I don't know. I remember years and years ago, we were in, I was in a club actually in Birmingham, and there was a guy there, and I swear he plays for the Villa. I'm an Aston Villa fan. And I went over to him, and it was a guy, Thomas Hitzlsperger. And I said, are you Tommy Hitzlsperger? And he looked at me like, please don't be an opposition fan. Like, he just looked like, oh God, here we go. And he said, yeah. And I was like, yes. Anyway, and he was there on his own waiting for his pals to arrive. And my mates and I were, I said, can we buy you a drink, Tommy? And he said, okay, yeah. And we ended up hanging around for like an hour until his mates rocked up. And it was just, that's the only time. I mean, I'm sure it's happened since then. But that's the first thing that came to me. That's the thing I remember more than anything as well. And going back to what we were saying, no one wants you to be a dick. So just be like nice. Like, you could easily have just said, no, go away. But yeah. that's always stayed in my head, really, that.
Just a side, I remember when we went to the Isle of Wight Festival a couple of years ago for my stag do, and on the ferry over,
that was brilliant.
He's a huge Jam and Paul Weller fan, like huge.
It was so funny.
Anyway, we saw a guy who looked very, very, very much like Paul Weller.
Funny enough, Paul Weller was at the Isle of Wight as well that year.
Okay. I can't stand things that are cringy. I feel like this is going to be really cringy.
No. So, and he's not far away, so we can hear him. So Phil was like, he was kind of like freaking out. What do I say? I was like, just go and say hello. Like, you don't need to, if you want to. Like, the ferry wasn't busy or anything like that. So he wandered over there and he's like, excuse me, are you Paul Weller? And this guy just went, no.
And then Phil
was kind of there just standing. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Just blatantly was.
But he didn't turn away from it. He just kind of like backed off.
Oh my God. That's literally the perfect thing to happen on a stag do. Just the perfect stag do moment.
Especially when everybody's seen it as well.
Yeah.
Well, then it turned into, for the rest of the weekend, whenever Phil was speaking to somebody random, it would be, excuse me, are you Paul Weller?
Yeah, of course. Of course it would. I mean, I'm sure it still happens to this day.
To this day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Have you ever said no? When someone said, are you Fred or George Weasley?
I used to.
On
a night out.
Night out,
I would always say no. I'd always deny it because I didn't want any hassle.
Mm.
Especially if they were drunk as well.
Yeah. But then as I got a little bit older, I just said, yeah, I am, man. Do you want a drink? Like, let me buy you a drink.
Mm.
Going by that, how would you want to be that experience to be with someone else? And I enjoy that more now because then it seems like if you just get on their wavelength, straight away then it's and show that you're a normal, like you're a regular person, there. Yeah. It seems to diffuse any kind of apprehension or freak out, shall we say.
So definitely.
Yeah, that's definitely helped. And in fact, sometimes I've been in an airport waiting for you've got a layover for like 3 or 4 hours. I'll literally just text saying, if anyone's at, say I'm in LAX, I'll be like, if anyone's at Terminal 3 at LAX and want a drink, come and meet me at this bar. And I've, a couple of times, that is dangerous. Well, you said, but it's
dangerous.
But then you see who's following you. And then there's literally like a big bloke will turn up. Hello. Like it's the most
I'm here for
thing.
The murder. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daisy 324. Nice to meet you. Yeah.
Wow, scary but kind of good tactic.
Well, you know, your thing is you're safe in an airport because they've gone through security.
True, that's true. And there's lots of cameras everywhere, so if anything, exactly. Anything sinister was to happen, they'd know about it. So I think we've come to the end, and I'd like to thank you so much, both of you, for being so candid and honest and having a great fun laugh with me. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, April. Really enjoyed
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Thanks, April.
Thank you.
You going to say something? Or
don't you have to say, so how did it go?
Oh, do I? Is that my one line? Okay, we'll start again. Ready? And how did it go?
It was really good.
Yeah?
They are such nice boys.
Boy, men.
Well, yeah. I found myself calling them gents.
Yeah? Did you find yourself eyeing them up a little bit, did you?
No, Jamie, I did not.
You sure?
I'm sure.
If you had to pick one, though.
Oh, that's very mean.
That's just come to me, but how do you pick a twin? Which one?
That's very mean. I'm not going to dignify that with an answer.
Do them both at the same time.
Jamie,
happy
honestly,
days.
Honestly, why can't you
ask... You said it.
I know.
Okay, what did you learn? What did you learn about them that you didn't know before?
I learned that they both, if they weren't known for Harry Potter, they would both be doing scary jobs.
Like being twins?
No.
Okay.
Ollie would be a pilot, not of helicopters.
Horrible.
I know, horrible.
Horrible
told
lunatic.
Told me the most horrible story about when an engine...
Don't tell me.
No.
Don't tell me. No.
I nearly freaked out whilst he was telling me.
I just gagged.
Yes.
Did you hear it?
Oh, awful.
Ugh.
And James would be search and rescue. I thought a Canadian Mountie.
He's got a Mountie vibe about him. They both have.
But I was wrong.
Search and rescue in a plane as well, or a helicopter?
Well, I think, yeah.
What's wrong with them?
I know. It's terrifying.
Absolutely. Out of all the things that you could do in the world,
yeah.
Why would you want to do that? Imagine being rescued by the Weasleys.
I know. That, especially if you were, like, it would be, there'll be a broomstick vibe,
oh
wouldn't
my
there?
God. If you could get Rupert in on it as well. Oh, Grinty. One of them's flying. One of them's on the top, sort of out.
And
like,
in that little car. Doesn't the car fly?
What car?
The little...
It's a helicopter.
No. Oh, I'm talking about
You're
Harry
doing
Potter.
A Harry Potter thing.
Yeah.
Right. It would be weird if they turned up in a car, because it's real
I see what you're
life.
Saying. Yeah. I thought we were talking about if the Weasleys
Imagine
rescued you.
You're in the sea, and you're like, oh my God, I'm drowning. And then a car turns
Rupert
up.
Grint turns up in a blue car.
And then one of them comes down abseiling, maybe? I don't know. And it's like, I'm here to save you. And then they hug you. And I bet this is turning you on, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Of course.
God.
I've only just thought about it. It's three of them now.
So, that's it. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you did, please subscribe. Because we're doing this for people to hear. And if they can't find us, they can't hear us. I always love knowing what you think of the show. So drop me a DM on Instagram. @ Are You Michelle from Skins. Are You Michelle from Skins was produced by me, The Tape Agency, and Becky Voice. Music is from the South Lane Studio and artwork from Black Star Photography. Special thanks to Jamie Patterson, without whom none of this would be possible.